evening, everyone. Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. We try to give you a little different slant on the news from what you're going to hear from the mainstream media. I'm Lou Carroll, your host. I'm going to begin tonight with something that we haven't talked about that I recall for quite some time, and that's the real ID. There was a controversy, maybe a year, maybe even 2 years ago, and now it's suddenly coming on the scene again. This is from Fox News, quite recent, April 19th, 2025, and the headline reads, "Looming Real ID Deadline Causes Chaos at DMVs as Critics Take to Social Media." This is by Ashley DeMella at Fox News. The countdown is on. In less than 20 days, the Real ID requirement will take effect, requiring Americans to obtain a new form of identification in order to fly domestically. Well, this is me speaking, Lou. I haven't flown in about 40 years because my late wife, Elizabeth, didn't take to the idea of flying. She was a little frightened of the whole idea. So we always drove. So it really doesn't affect me too much, but I'm sure some of you listening out there count on flying if you have relatives far away, too far to drive. What else can you do? Excuse me. So let me go on now. Other identification that will be accepted in lieu of a real ID include a valid U.S. passport or passport card, DHS trusted traveler cards such as Global Entry, Department of Defense IDs, permanent resident cards, and border crossing cards. As of Friday morning in New Jersey, the Department of Motor Vehicles, NJDMV, website showed zero appointments available for Real ID services on its site. There were, however, 13,380 appointments available for non-driver IDs. Also, 31,107 appointments open for transferring driver's licenses from out of state. DMVs across the country are reportedly working to meet the demand, with some implementing Saturday Real ID events and extending appointment hours during the week. And it gives a little sample if you look at their website, which I'll give again a little bit later. And then it goes on to say if a driver's license falls within the renewal period, the person can book a renewal appointment to upgrade to a Real ID. And there are 51,906 appointments available for that. Again, I believe that's New Jersey they're talking about. Daniel Velez, a spokesperson for TSA New England, told Fox News Digital on Friday that the agency will be, quote, ready to enforce, unquote, the policy on the deadline of May 7th, and that the requirement will, quote, not be pushed back, unquote. The launch date happens to fall on a Wednesday, which is one of the least busy travel days of the week, Velez said. Airports are finalizing plans on how to handle those travelers who do not have proper identification to fly. He added, I guess that's Mr. Velez, that travel delays will be, quote, few and far between. Well, let's hope he's right about that. The approaching Real ID deadline has drawn comments from both supporters and critics, sparking debates on social media. Quote, Real ID is literally just a regular ID with a little star on it to demonstrate you showed the DMV clerk a document with your name and address on it. It's going to be okay, people. One user posted it on X. Another user wrote, quote, I see Real ID is trending. What's BS about this is you have to make an appointment. You can't just walk into the DMV and get it taken care of. As always, no appointments available when you need it, unquote. Someone else joked, you can pitch a tent on their lawn. Camp out until they can see you. Another person said, Real IDs are an insult to every American citizen. What next? And skipping down, we have this. Former presidential candidate and ex-House Representative Ron Paul, Republican of Texas, spoke on X, quote, Real ID is one of the greatest threats to America's civil liberties in decades, unquote. Another user posted, quote, the fact there are roughly 90 million people in this country who will be unable to fly starting May 7th unless they pay to get a real ID seems like it should be a bigger story, unquote. Another said, I don't know if it's the same in every state, but in Nevada, we have to physically go to the DMV to get one. I'd rather take my passport everywhere I go than have to go to the DMV. And one other man shared, even as a right-leaning independent that has some libertarian views, I don't get the hoopla over real ID. You're already on several lists, chief among them, via your Social Security number. Well, that gives a little flavor of some of the controversy over this. I think we've always had some fears that this is just another means to identify you, to track you, and just to interfere with your privacy. Now let's move on to natural news. And by the way, that was from Fox News, the one I just read, April 19th, 2025. Looming real ID deadline causes chaos, etc. Now we move to natural news. Gain-of-function cat-bird flu now on the rise, as nearly a dozen cats in Colorado test positive for bird flu due to contaminated cat food. This is by S.D. Wells, again, Natural News. And this appeared on March 27th, a couple weeks back. And I noticed that they have the words test positive in quotation marks. And I believe what they're insinuating there, and I tend to agree, is that the test is practically worthless anyway. It's not even worthy of calling it a test. But now, they have four main points here. The first one, alleged cat flu bird, outbreak. Nearly a dozen cats in Colorado reported testing positive for avian flu, H5N1, after consuming contaminated chicken-flavored cat food, with a claimed 90% fatality rate among infected cats. Two, conspiracy-driven narrative. The article frames the outbreak as a potential plandemic, suggesting gain-of-function research funded by USAID/Joe Biden engineered the virus to spread from birds to cats to humans, echoing COVID-era fear-mongering. Point three, lockdowns and mRNA fears. Satirical calls for cat masking, social distancing, and the lockdowns are paired with warnings about mRNA vaccines for pets, claiming they may cause shedding of spike proteins or prion diseases. And their summary point four, broader anti-pharma sentiment, links the incident to past outbreaks such as COVID, Ebola, Zika, as part of a pattern of big pharma and government collusion to profit from bioweapons or forced vaccinations. And now summing it up, are cats in Colorado eating contaminated bat soup? Well, and this is on the satiric side, of course. Will the next pandemic of bird flu spread because cats are eating infected chicken-flavored cat food and then sneezing the gain-of-function cat flu on their human keepers? Be sure to mask up your cats and dogs 24/7 and keep them at least 6 feet away from each other and your children until this whole cat-bird flu COVID-25 curve is flattened out. That's right. 11 cats have tested positive. Again, the word positive is in quotes because who knows what that means with the test that, if I remember rightly, the CDC itself said wasn't any good. And going on, it says, that's right. Excuse me again. That's right. 11 cats have tested positive, whatever that means, for bird flu. After Big Food, which I think they're saying is the first cousin to Big Pharma, recalled more of that contaminated cat food from the markets. Those darn PCR tests keep coming back positive every time. They must be right, right? Suddenly, cats are now the new potential vector for transmitting gain-of-function avian influenza that somehow is now jumping from birds to cats to humans, thanks to USAID and Biden-funded bioweapon labs around the world to create novel viruses that can be used against humanity to kill us off or make us all sick to death in order for them to earn money. It goes on, skipping down now. If your cat is not already restricted to your home as a house cat, get ready for kitty lockdowns. If the vet injects your cat with mRNA spike proteins, you might watch out for a whole new kind of shedding. Your cat does. And we're not talking about fur, but spike proteins or prions that cause infections to spread and immune function breakdown. I'm going to skip down again. Will the government have to put down a billion cats like they do the chickens every time a few of them catch a virus? Will cat bird flu travel to Canada and Mexico? Or can it not cross borders and tall walls? Infected cats don't eat much, and they lay around the house all day. Don't they do that anyway? The most recent recall of toxic cat food applies to specific lots of savage cat foods, large and small chicken boxes, which were sold at retailers in California, Colorado, New York, Pennsylvania, and Washington. Quote, cats appear to be especially susceptible to severe illness, often resulting in death, the AVMA said in a statement. They went on, the risk of cat-to-human transmission is considered extremely low, but may increase with prolonged unprotected exposure to infected animals. Or if Fauci's gain of function, scientists can figure out a way they'll make it spread more easily, like COVID. Okay, and that was from Natural News. The abbreviated title, Gain of Function, Cat, Bird, Flu, etc. And the date was, March 27th of this year. Okay, now we're going to move up for a couple of things to my old home state. I often talk about Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. If you're from there, you know you're not supposed to say the state of Massachusetts. It's supposed to be the Commonwealth. That's its official title. Well, this one came from Slate News. Harvard professors scrambled to block audit into taxpayer-funded government grants worth billions. By David Hawkins, April 17th. Professors at Harvard University are scrambling to block investigations by President Donald Trump's administration into almost $9 billion. And yes, you heard that right. That's with a B. $9 billion in taxpayer-funded government grants and contracts awarded to the prestigious school. The Harvard officials have filed a lawsuit aimed at halting a federal review of the grants and contracts. It comes as the Trump administration investigates anti-Semitism on college campuses, including Harvard. And if I'm going to say it my Massachusetts way, Harvard. The lawsuit, filed Friday in federal court in Boston, claims that the administration's audit threatens academic freedom and free speech. It was brought by the Harvard chapter of the American Association of University Professors, the national organization. The legal challenge comes amid a broader federal effort to investigate anti-Semitic incidents and rhetoric on college campuses, including those at elite universities. The Trump administration has increased scrutiny of institutions receiving taxpayer funds, particularly where student protests or faculty conduct have raised concerns. Jumping down now a little bit, Harvard University, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I'll just add, for those of you not familiar with that part of the country, it's right across the river from Boston. So many people think of it as being in Boston, but technically it is across the river in Cambridge. But anyway, Harvard University has not commented publicly on the case. While the administration has not publicly detailed the full scope of the audit, it is part of a broader review of federal funding to universities where there have been allegations of anti-Semitism or campus unrest. The issue gained national attention in 2023 when then-Harvard President Claudine Gay testified before Congress. During her testimony, Gay was asked whether calling for the genocide of Jews would violate Harvard's code of conduct. She responded that such speech, meaning asking for genocide of Jews, would not necessarily constitute a violation, prompting widespread criticism. Gay later stepped down from her position. The federal audit is focused on ensuring that taxpayer money is not being used to subsidize institutions that allow discriminatory conduct or fail to uphold civil rights standards, officials have said. The legal action from the Harvard professors comes despite the university's massive financial resources. As of 2024, Harvard's endowment is valued at more than $51 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B, making it the largest university endowment in the country. The school's reliance on federal grants and contracts, despite this endowment, has also sparked criticism. Let me just interject there. This is Lou now speaking, my own words. When they have $51 billion stacked up in some kind of a fund somewhere that can just sit there gaining interest, why do they need all these government handouts? Now, if their contracts, where Harvard is providing a service to the government, that's one thing. If they're just giveaways, that's quite another thing. You can fund a lot of student tuition when you have $51 billion laid aside. You can hire more than just a few professors, too, with that kind of money. So again, why do they depend upon the government so much? Why do they, in essence, take money from the average American and give it to the wealthy who go to Harvard? Now, I agree, there are some not so wealthy that go there. But let's face it, Harvard is a very high prestige university, one of the Ivy League, and not many of my friends, including me, ever even considered going there. We thought, you know, we would just stand no chance of getting in, and I don't think we would have. The article finishes up by saying the professor's lawsuit is expected to be an early test of how far universities can go in resisting federal oversight tied to campus behavior and the use of taxpayer funds. The case is pending in U.S. District Court in Boston, where a hearing date has yet to be scheduled. And again, if I'm giving money through my taxes to a big-name college like Harvard, I would like to think that the government has some right to see how that money is spent. And is it paying professors to indoctrinate students to be attacking Jews? Let's put it that way. Maybe killing them in some cases. Some of these far-left professors, and some of them, frankly, from the Middle East, who have an agenda. Well, enough of that. That was from Slate News. The title, abbreviated, Harvard Professors Scramble to Block Audit. David Hawkins was the author, April 17th, 2025. Now, on a little lighter note, maybe not so much a lighter note if you're up around Boston, we have a little article. Thanks to one of our faithful listeners who supplies us with all kinds of good information from up in that part of the world. And he sent me several excellent clippings, but just isn't time to do them all. I wish I had several hours to do these. So I picked out one or two of the ones that I thought would be most interesting. The title of this one, and this came from, I believe, the Boston Herald. Yeah, Boston Herald. The date I am not quite sure of. Yes, I am. April 11th, so not so long ago. Tanya joins DEI Hall of Shame. This is by Howie Carr, columnist. There are certain jobs you don't want to get, no matter how prestigious they might seem at first, because once you're picked, it's only a matter of time before you're either disgraced, exiled, imprisoned, or even dead. For instance, boss of the Gambino crime family, anchor of the CBS Evening News, or head terrorist for Hamas, Hezbollah, or ISIS. And to those dead-end jobs, you can add this one. Latest poster gal for DEI politics in the city of Boston. Am I right? Tanya Fernandez Anderson, the next convicted felon member of the Boston City Council. She is just the latest in a long line of uber-woke frauds who were the subject of innumerable slobbering agitprop or agitprop puff pieces in regime-controlled Boston media. She follows in the footsteps of, among others, Monica Cannon Grant, Rachel Rollins, Diane Wilkerson, Claudine Gay, Kendra Lara. Tanya seems to have it all going for her, or seemed, with an ED on the end, to have it all going for her. So many firsts. First former illegal alien, first African-born, first Muslim on the city council. And now, she becomes the first African illegal alien Muslim to ever be convicted of a felony while serving on the Boston City Council. Welcome to the DEI Hall of Shame, Tanya. All these crooked, corrupt flameouts follow pretty much the same pattern. They've all been coddled and pampered by guilt-ridden rich white liberals all their lives, to the point that they assume everything will be handed to them, as long as they scream racism loud enough. Every one of these race grifters has taken the scams to new levels. But TFA absolutely tried to shoot the moon. TFA being this lady, Tanya Fernandez Anderson. Skipping down now, Tanya is going to prison for grabbing $7,000 cash in the bathroom at City Hall, a kickback from one of her other relatives that she hired and then gave a bonus to. In that, Tanya was following in the footsteps of one of her predecessors as Roxbury City Councilor, Chuck Superfly Turner, who grabbed a grand and was lugged to Club Fed. Another racist frame. I should say Roxbury, by the way, is a section of Boston. As a female crooked DEI poll, Tanya's crime mimicked ex-Senator Diane Wilkerson from, where else, Roxbury. She was recorded on an FBI camera stuffing $1,000 into her bra. They're all from the 02120 zip code, and they all end up with a different kind of number from the Bureau of Prisons. Wilkerson's was 21757-038. Turner's was 80641-038. The name Kendra Lara is now fading from political memory. She retired from the Boston City Council after a brief and shiny moment when she was the poster girl for Boston's DEI politics. It was 2023, and she crashed into a house in JP, which I think is Jamaica Plain, another section of Boston, while driving an unregistered, uninsured, uninspected vehicle, and she had no driver's license. Well, you get the idea there. Being on the Boston City Council is not necessarily a job that you would be highly respected for. There's more to it, but I think if you go to the Boston Herald's website, you might be able to find that. It's not that long ago. Again, the title, Tanya Joins DEI Hall of Shame, by Howie Carr. And the date, once again, was, let me see now, I had it once, April 11th, 2025, from the Boston Herald. And as I've said before, and my contact in Massachusetts reiterated, even since I was quite a young guy, and still living up in Massachusetts. And I've been in Maryland. I've been in Maryland for over 50 years now, so this is a long time ago. The Boston Globe was the left-wing paper. The Boston Herald was the more conservative paper. So I guess that still fits the bill today. All right, now we're going to a more serious topic. I guess it's serious enough for the lady going to jail, but this one's serious for the whole country. This one is from the People's Voice. I have two companion articles, and I'll pick the best parts of each one. They're both in the People's Voice. This one was April 17th by Niamh Harris, and the title was The CDC Study Reveals That Autism Rates in Children Has Risen to 1 in 31. And it says the finding was based on an analysis of medical records from 2022. In its latest study, published this week, the CDC said the latest figures are up from 1 in 36, that is 2.8% in 2020. So now, looking back on that, it was 1 in 36, now it's 1 in 31. HHS Secretary RFK Jr. has said that the catastrophic autism epidemic is very real, and he's announced a series of new studies to identify what toxins are causing it. The Defender, that's a publication, reports, overall, the prevalence of autism in U.S. children rose approximately 17% in just the 2 years between 2020 and 2022, continuing a decades-long trend. The condition was 3.4 times more prevalent among boys than girls, 1 in 20 for the boys overall, and as high as 1 in 12.5 in California. ASD rates were lower, and that would be ASD is, let's see now. Well, it's autism. They had a specific title, but I can't get my eye on it at the moment. I think it's probably autism spectrum disease, probably. At any rate, the rates for ASD were lower among white children than among Asian, Pacific Islander, Black, Hispanic, and multiracial children, continuing a pattern that first emerged in 2020. Mary Holland, the CEO of Children's Health Defense, said, quote, the 1 in 31 number is a testament to the failure of the medical system as we know it. Holland added, the level of autism among 8-year-olds has been steadily increasing for decades, without unbiased, real research into the likely causes. Tens of thousands of parents have come forward in recent decades to say they believe vaccines triggered their children's autism. Yet mainstream science, media, and government regulators have rejected the idea of even examining this observation seriously, unquote. And this is Lou now. I'll speak and just interject. I don't have the facts in front of me, but I believe that a lot of these studies that say, oh, no, vaccines, they don't have anything to do with it, have been funded by Big Pharma, and they have a vested interest. So they weren't unbiased. It's interesting, too, that that's the only thing they came up with. They said, oh, they are not caused by vaccines. Well, how do you know that when you don't know what the real cause is? But let's move on. Holland praised efforts by the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, HHS, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., to study the problem. And she said, quote, the only good news here is that we finally have a president and HHS secretary truly committed to looking at all the potential causes and stopping this downward trajectory that is putting our nation at risk. Kennedy announced in a cabinet meeting last week that the government has launched a, quote, massive testing and research effort, unquote, to determine what causes autism. He said the effort involves hundreds of scientists globally and will be completed by September. Once the environmental causes of autism are identified, quote, we'll be able to eliminate those exposures, Kennedy said. Commenting today on the CDC report, Kennedy said the autism epidemic has now reached a scale unprecedented in human history because it affects the young. The risks and costs of this crisis are 1,000 times more threatening to our country than COVID-19. Autism is preventable, and it is unforgivable that we have not yet identified the underlying causes. We should have had these answers 20 years ago. This is beyond an epidemic. The CDC study is based on data from the Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network, which has used health and education data since 2000 to track autism rates among 8 and 4-year-olds at multiple sites across the country. The CDC releases a report on the data every 2 years. The 2022 data comes from 16 sites across the country. Since the CDC started collecting the data, prevalence estimates have skyrocketed from 1 in 150 in the year 2000 to today's estimate of 1 in every 31 children. Again, that was from the People's Voice. CDC study reveals autism rates in children has risen to 1 in 31, April 17, 2025. Now, a companion article that actually appeared the day before, April 16th, in that same publication, is entitled, CDC admits 1 in 12.5 boys in highly vaccinated California diagnosed with autism. I'm going to skip down on this because it does repeat some of what I just read. One thing I found especially interesting on the third page, at least on the printout, it shows a chart, and it reflects exactly what the previous article said. In the year 1970, autism was 1 in 10,000. By 1995, it had grown to 1 in 1,000, 10 times as much. And from there on, there's a steady curve moving upward, which has the general appearance of an exponential curve, meaning it's beginning multiplied by a certain amount every year. Not always exactly the same amount, but the general trend is that, which means simply it's increasing faster and faster and faster. And unless they find out what's causing it and can find a way to stop that, it'll continue that way. A few other things that are worth reading from this article. Toby Rogers, PhD, a fellow at the Brownstone Institute for Social and Economic Research and co-author of Autism Tsunami, said the impact of rising prevalence on the society cost of autism in the United States. I guess that's the title of the article. And he said the new numbers were stunning. He said, this is again, Toby Rogers said, how long is the U.S. public health establishment going to keep pretending there isn't a problem? An ASD rate of 3.2% nationwide among children ages 8 years in 2022, 4.9% for boys, 5.3% in California, 4.7% in Pennsylvania, and autism rates a full percentage point higher in Asian and Black communities than in white communities, this is beyond an epidemic, unquote. The CDC study also evaluated 4-year-old children who typically have lower autism rates because many of them have not yet been diagnosed, and found rates among the age group, that age group, also increased. 4-year-olds born in 2018 had ASD at rates 1.7 times higher than those born in 2014, suggesting that future rates will likely be even higher. And it's a subtitle, data does not support better diagnosis theory on rising autism rates. And this is a common thing. This is Lou now speaking. A lot of these mainstream reports and so-called scientific reports will say, oh, the autism rates are higher simply because we're paying more attention. We've broadened the definition. So we're including more people that would have been there years ago if we'd only had a little different definition. So that's what they're explaining here. Reading on, the CDC and mainstream media suggest that increasing rates of autism are a result of improved diagnosis, which has led to the inclusion of many more high-functioning people with autism in the data collection. However, the data in the CDC report, this latest report, contradict that theory. The latest data show that nearly two-thirds of children diagnosed in 2022 with autism have an intellectual disability or borderline intellectual function, meaning they have an IQ of 85 or lower. Those numbers have also increased since the last report. And said Rebecca Estep, a longtime autism advocate and mother of an adult son with autism, quote, "These children face lifelong challenges with learning communication." Those are two separate things. I read that too fast. They face lifelong challenges with learning, communication, and independence. Many will need specialized care, educational supports, and social services for decades, services that are already stretched thin in many communities, unquote. Again, that was by Rebecca Estep. Research shows the cost of those services are rising exponentially and impacting the entire society. And again, for the non-mathematicians, exponentially simply means instead of adding the same amount over and over again, you are multiplying by the same amount. It's kind of like compound interest. If you let it grow, it'll zoom out of control. So again, that was from the People's Voice, the second of the two articles. This one from April 16th of this year, and the short form of the title was CDC admits 1 in 12.5 boys in highly vaccinated California diagnosed with autism. All right. And now, let me see what we have here. Now, Brother Bruce, one of our very kind people that sends us some useful information for American Prophecy, has sent some pretty interesting things here. The first one came from HalTurnerRadioShow.com and is dated April 7th, 2025. This is a longer one. Not just a headline, but thankfully, Brother Bruce sent two or three pages. And it says, the three stages of a falling empire. Every empire dies the same way every time. Again, from Hal Turner World, April 3rd, 2025. He says, from ancient Rome to the present-day United States, the fall of the empire, the fall of any empire, always happens the exact same way. And he says, I found this on the net. It's not my own writing. Very worth the brief read. Morality collapses. Economy collapses. War collapses the nation. Same way every single time in that order. That's what you're seeing with your own eyes right now. And there are a series of points. The first one, a moral collapse, the rot within. And he has a quote from Proverbs 14, verse 34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So first, what happens? Well, society abandons virtue. What was once shameful becomes celebrated. Traditional values are mocked. Families fall apart. Hedonism and rebellion rule. Truth is silenced. Some historical examples. Babylon. There was idolatry, sorcery, and sexual perversion. Rome had gladiator games, orgies, infanticide, and fall of Roman virtue. America has gender confusion, abortion glorified, censorship of truth, degeneracy promoted. And then the result, The spiritual foundation crumbles, the nation loses its identity and moral clarity. The second part, economic collapse, the curse of corruption. And here again, a biblical quote from Daniel 5:27, "You have been weighed on the scales and have found wanting." And I think this was at the time of the handwriting on the wall, if I'm not mistaken. That might have been the actual translation of those strange words that Daniel had to interpret for Belshazzar. Now, what happens in the economic sphere? Debt explodes. Currency loses value. Governments overspend. Elites enrich themselves while the people suffer. Middle class disappears. Inflation rises. Systems break down. And some historical examples. And again, we have the same three cultures. First, Babylon. Lavish wealth built on tribute and slavery. Rome. Currency debasement. Bread and circus economy. Heavy taxation. Economic collapse. And America. 34 plus billion. No, I'm wrong. $34 plus trillion debt. That's the national debt. Inflation. Manipulated markets. CBDCs are coming. And the result, this again is part of the economic portion. The result, scarcity increases. Trust disappears. Tyranny offers, quote, solutions, unquote. And then the third stage is war, the engine of reset. And the Bible quote for that is from Matthew 24:7, nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. What happens? War is used to unite, distract, or reset. Internal civil war or external world war. It breaks the old system to make way for something new. And some historical examples from those same three civilizations. Babylon was conquered overnight by the Medo-Persians. And that was that famous thing we just referred to, the handwriting on the wall, occurred, I think, the same day that Babylon was conquered. In Rome, it was invaded by Germanic tribes, and then it collapsed from within. America, well, we have here the Ukraine conflict, Israel, China, border collapse, civil unrest. The drums are beating. And the result, collapse is complete. Power shifts, the new system rises, often darker, more controlled, and anti-freedom. And then the final pattern, morality collapses, economy collapses, war collapses the nation. This is the cycle of fallen empires. This is the script being followed today, leading to the final kingdom of the beast. And Brother Bruce has written in a little comment here, which I think is good. Revelation 13, beast, one world order. And we can see all these things. And there are other, this is Lou speaking now, you can look at other civilizations throughout history that follow this pattern. Assyria, in the ancient world, Greece, we've already talked about Rome. Rome took a long time. It wasn't until 476 years after the, roughly speaking, the birth of Christ, that finally they considered to be the fall of Rome. But the signs were there long before that. I think Rome was sacked. I couldn't give you the date, but it was some time before 476. All right, well, now we have some other headlines. Remember Australia. Australia was the place where lockdowns were very compulsory. They really went all out for the COVID vaccines, much more so than the USA did, thank goodness for us. And we still remember that episode in our book, that my late wife, Elizabeth, and I wrote, COVID and Coming Chaos, about the children without their parents being put into this big auditorium and vaccinated. And I don't remember, I think the details are in the book. I don't remember if the parents even had any say in the matter. I suspect they probably didn't. How many of those children are now sick from the vaccine? Well, we don't know. And they wouldn't say, of course. If you'd like our book, by the way, this is a good time to mention that. If you'd like to get a copy of our book, we still have a few left. COVID and Coming Chaos, it's a good historical survey of all that went on, the lockdowns, the intimidation of people. Get this shot or you'll lose your job, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of the criticism of the way the vaccines were rolled out, the lack of research, all of those points about the reason that Elizabeth and I did not get the vaccine to this very day. And if you'd like a copy, just write to me, Lou Caverly, that's spelled C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and the Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. I'll give that again in a couple minutes. We can also use your donations if you like this program and want to keep it on the air. We have several faithful people that help us out. If you'd like to give a donation, either big or small, you can write to that same address. We'd be very, very grateful. I keep saying we, and of course it's only me now. I miss Elizabeth greatly. She was a wonderful wife and a wonderful co-host for this program. Many of you have written the kindest notes, and I thank you so much for those, saying how much you appreciated her and what a fine job she did. So, again, if you want to write to us to get the book, make a donation. If you remember that the book is free, you don't have to pay anything for the book. If you can put a little $5 bill in to cover the postage, it would be much appreciated, but I'll send it to you regardless. Again, my address is Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. So what's Australia up to now? Well, the title here reads, Australia to start imprisoning Christians who pray in public. This was April 8th, 2025. This was from the People's Voice by Sean, I believe you pronounce his name, Adult Tabatabai. I apologize if I'm not pronouncing it quite right. He's a frequent writer on this website, has some very good things. In a stunning move, Australia's New South Wales has enacted the Conversion Practices Ban Act 2024, effective April 4th. Ah, so it's already gone into effect. Threatening Christians with up to 5 years in prison and fines of $100,000 for praying in public or counseling LGBTQA individuals, even when such support is requested. This law directly targets believers in Sydney and beyond who hold fast to their faith, casting a dark shadow over religious freedom. The legislation has sparked outrage among Christians who fear that sharing the transformative message of Jesus, healing power, defending the traditional definition of marriage, are affirming the complementary nature of men and women could now brand them as criminals. What was once a matter of personal conviction and free expression is now a potential legal battle, leaving many in New South Wales questioning how far this ban will stretch and what it means for their faith. And that's just a summary of the article, again entitled Australia to Start Imprisoning Christians Who Pray in Public, from the People's Voice, and that the website, by the way, for that is not .com, it's .tv, the People's Voice .tv, April 8th, 2025. Next, we have China official refers to Americans as peasants. Okay, I guess I'm a peasant then. Senior Chinese official, and this, by the way, was from HalTurnerRadioShow.com, Hal Turner World, April 15th. A senior Chinese official warned Tuesday that President Donald Trump's tariffs would backfire and that soon, quote, those peasants in the U.S., unquote, would, quote, wail in front of the 5,000 years of Chinese civilization, unquote. The remarks are the latest Chinese repudiation of Trump's global trade war as Beijing shifts gears from attempting to communicate with the White House to hitting back frequently and forcefully in an effort to cast the United States as an irresponsible global power. China's top official overseeing Hong Kong and Macau, Xi Baolong, lashed out at the U.S. during a speech on national security in which he linked 2019 pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong with what Beijing sees as continued U.S. efforts to suppress China. All right, next, let's go to this one here. I see our time is getting a little short. We still have about 8 minutes. What would happen if China dumped hundreds of billions of U.S. Treasury bonds overnight? This is from endtimeheadlines.org. And the date was April 15th of this year. Imagine waking up to headlines that China just dumped hundreds of billions of U.S. Treasury bonds overnight. The markets are in free fall. Mortgage rates spike by breakfast. And your 401k just lost 20%. Far-fetched? Maybe. But if Beijing ever decides to weaponize its $760 billion in U.S. debt, this hypothetical becomes a very real economic earthquake. And in time, or in a time when America is already on shaky ground, after years of runaway spending, record inflation, and foreign policy confusion under the former Biden administration, the idea of China pulling the financial trigger isn't just a thought experiment. It's a warning shot. And this is part of a longer article that you can get if you go to your public library or if you have the internet in your house. And the title, once again, was What Would Happen If China Dumped Hundreds of Billions of U.S. Treasury Bonds Overnight? And the website is endtimesheadlines.org. That's all one word, endtimesheadlines. Make that singular. And timeheadlines.org, April 15th. Now, here's one that appeared in, let me see now, same publication, endtimeheadlines.org. This one, April 14th, where chip implants are heading should terrify us all. Recent advancements in neural and bio-integrated chip implants have sparked widespread discussion about their potential to transform human capabilities, with applications ranging from medical breakthroughs to cybernetic enhancements reminiscent of science fiction. A report entitled From Brain Bluetooth to Full Robocop, where chip implants will be heading soon, published by the That was the title of this article. From Brain Bluetooth to Full Robocop, where chip implants will be heading soon, published by The Conversation, and that apparently is a publication, The Conversation, explores the trajectory of this technology, highlighting both its promise and its ethical complexities. Drawing on insights from multiple news sources, this article examines the current state of chip implants and the projected future, weaving together perspectives on innovation, societal impact, and the challenges ahead. All right, a little different topic here. Trump administration fast tracks controversial self-amplifying mRNA vaccine for H5N1 bird flu. This was from same publication, endtimeheadlines.org. This was April 15th. The Trump administration announced its decision to grant fast-track designation to ARCT 2304, a self-amplifying mRNA, that is sa-mRNA, vaccine candidate developed by Arcturus Therapeutics, targeting the H5N1 avian flu virus. This move has sparked significant debate, with proponents highlighting its potential to bolster pandemic preparedness and critics raising concerns about safety and transparency. Well, wherever you heard, this is Lou speaking now, wherever you heard that idea of fast-tracking a vaccine, oh, wasn't that COVID-19? And look at all the controversy that has sparked, because they fast-tracked it, they skipped a lot of the tests that would have been done normally, they put it out very quickly compared to the ordinary safety concerns for vaccines. And the concluding sentence of this article, the portion that I have, says, ARCT 2304 differs from traditional vaccines by utilizing a self-replicating mRNA platform. And that's the portion which I have of the article. But again, if you want to get it in depth, go to endtimeheadlines.org for April the 15th, Trump administration fast-tracked controversial self-amplifying mRNA vaccine. Well, that gives you some of the current headlines. There's lots more, of course, but we've run out of time for today, so we'll save some of that for next week. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you'd like to write to us, you don't have to send money. If you would just want to give us some feedback, write to Lou Caraboli, Post Office Box 28. That's 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in again next week. Good night.